Great to have you along today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jim Gould. He is the author of our book club selection titled South of Luck, a novel. It's published by University of Wisconsin Press, a great book. I really enjoyed reading it, and I bet you did, too, if you did read it. If you hadn't, well, maybe you ought to take a look at it. I think you're going to enjoy it. Scott in Plymouth will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Almost 65 years ago, I was born in Milltown, so I grew up and in my childhood years there. And if I do recall, the Stokely plant, the barracks that were currently at that time used for the Jamaicans who helped with the harvest of the peas and such. And so there were wooden barracks just on the site of the cannery there and such. Another random question is, have you reviewed the book from Sarah DeLuca, Dancing the Cows Home? It's kind of a coming of age story a little bit later than your book.
Dancing the Cows Home.
I have not read it. I just wrote down the title though, cause I'm going to investigate that. But I think it's neat that that you grew up in Milltown and this business about the Jamaicans, staying in sheds near the Stokely plant. That's very interesting. You know, there's another aspect of that region that's little known, in that Luck, Wisconsin was the manufacturing place for Dunkin' yo-yos. Remember the yo-yo craze?
Yeah.
If you go to the public library in Luck, they have a museum that's part of the building, and you can see the old yo-yos. They were the epicenter in the world for yo-yo making was Luck, Wisconsin at one point.
Yeah, and Wisconsin Public Television did a really nice piece on that as part of a little special program. And it might have been part of a larger thing they were doing, but it was really fascinating. They sold a lot of yo-yos. It was the yo-yo capital of the world, for goodness sakes. Scott, thank you for calling. Mark in Crystal Lake, Illinois, will go to you. Hi, Mark.
Larry, I cannot wait to read this book. My mother grew up in the next town over, Frederick, Wisconsin, also in Polk County. And she used to tell, she's been gone for quite a few years. She would have been about 100 years old, but she used to pick beans for Stokely as a summer job. She went to U of Wisconsin. And they talked about the prisoner of war camps and objected to some of the local girls flirting with those guys but through the fences. But I wanted to tell a quick anecdote. Her mother raised three girls alone. Her father died of tuberculosis caught in World War I. But her mother, for a time, was a telephone operator. And, of course, they had party lines then. And one day, my mom's mother, Mary Johnson, her name was in Frederick, at the telephone company, got a call from a little girl and said, the girl said, "Where's my mommy?" to my grandmother. And my grandmother happened to recognize the girl's voice. And she happened to know that her mother was at the store downtown. And so she said, "Well, your mother's at the store downtown, and I know she'll be back in about 20 minutes. And the little girl hung up and said, "Okay." And my grandmother was like sweeping the kitchen or something. She's at work. And she gets another call, and it's the same little girl. And the girl says, "Where are the cornflakes?"
Oh, that's a great story, Mark. I love that.
That's a great one also, that it's so nostalgic to think back on things like that. That's a fun one.
And it is indeed. Thank you so much. Appreciate it very much. I really wanted to mention a few other characters. Mr. Stenlund and Mrs. Quigley, and they were, actually, as it turns out, it was a really fun sequence within the book itself about Milo's time. He volunteers to watch for planes. Talk about that a little bit more. That was something towns did, I guess.
They did, and it's a bit in the book, this fictional book, that's a bit of reality, is that on top of the school roof, there was an enemy aircraft observation post, and Mr. Stenland, who also ran the radio store in town, fictionally, he is the head of the operation, and so he had to recruit volunteers, two of which were Milo. He had his shift on Friday nights, and then he would always replace Mrs. Quigley, who had the afternoon shift, and Mrs. Quigley would be up there knitting. But that was a real thing, and the fear was that the enemy would come through Canada over the Great Lakes and here seemingly safe in the Midwest, there might be an attack. Well, that was one of the topics I interviewed the man and wife in Milltown about, and they said, well, it's true that they had the enemy aircraft observation post, and he even showed me a copy of the book, How to Identify Silhouettes of Enemy Aircraft. But he said, nobody ever saw one. Nobody ever observed anything. You know, I think he was implying even civilian aircraft. But it was another one of those markers of the time.
I love that. It's just a great little part of the story. And then, of course, Milo looking down on the town at night and seeing the various people. And you had some great names, by the way. You had for some of the characters, Melonhead and Blondie and DiMaggio. It's a great way for minor characters to be remembered, that's for sure.
Yeah, we had Scarecrow behind the ice cream counter, also more formally known as Herman Schrapp. But yeah, nicknames are a good way to make a very memorable kind of an image attached to a character in a work of fiction. Yeah. So, I mean, in my short stories, I would use nicknames too. I think we had, of course, in my first book, we had Minnow as the main character.
Yeah.
And his name was Dell, but he was Minnow is what he was known as.
Chris in Heartland, hi.
Hey, Larry. I just thought I'd share something in regard to having it just been Father's Day. I was with my stepfather, Augie Pabst, who quite a few of your listeners probably know.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't know that I would say the majority of his racing career was inspired by one of the Pabst Farms had a hell of a lot of the prisoners of war in the day. And at the tender age of, I believe he was 9 or 10, he got to be really good buddies with a worker that had worked his way up, because they didn't just let anybody drive the farm equipment, and of which this was a farm truck. And there was nothing better than hearing Augie talk about how this guy would let him, this old prisoner of war, who was his best buddy, would let him get in the truck and just drive the hell out of it, you know, jumping the truck out in the fields and stuff like that.
Oh, man. Lots of stories. There's obviously a lot of interest in that brings to mind a lot of interest with the POWs for sure. And that certainly plays a role in your book. You've talked to a number of readers over the years through signings, book clubs, so forth. What surprises you about them, readers?
Well, I guess I would have expected more teenagers to be reading the books, but it's mostly adults. That's one thing I observed. And I guess that makes sense because we're talking about a nostalgic interest in a time in the past. The topic of Camp Milltown is a real popular one. Everybody, though, has their own favorite character. We already named some of them. Yeah. Raina Jackson maybe leads the list. Mrs. Quigley maybe a close second. I happen to like Mr. Crankle, the guy in the setup shop who gives Milo all the crummy jobs.
Are you going to, I wondered if you've started on your next book yet, and is there going to be a sequel to South of Luck? I could see a definite possibility for a sequel.
Yeah, I think it is set up for a sequel because, it just is. It's got a pretty good setup for a sequel, I think, but I haven't started writing that sequel. What I'm writing right now is a book set in Madison, Wisconsin, with a female protagonist who's 19 years old at the University of Wisconsin. So in the year is 1978-79, time frame. And so I went to college in Madison in those years. And so I know the kind of fun stuff to write about in Madison in those years. And I'm trying to do it in the form of a story that has a fictional, compelling main plot line.
Well, Jim, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really, really enjoyed your book, and I know everyone who called in today who had read it loved it as well. Thank you again for being with us, and when that book comes out, I probably will be having you back and talking again. Thanks, Jim. Jim Gould,
thanks, Larry.
His book is titled South of Luck, and you give it a look for sure. Coming up, right after the news, we're going to be talking about grilling with Mad Dog and Marilette. That next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here in Wisconsin. We grill year-round, but most of it, I think, or a lot of it at least, happens in the summer. And our next guests are masters of the grill in all its forms. Back with us, nationally recognized and self-proclaimed grillologist Mad Dog and Merrill. They're the hosts of the TV show Mad Dog and Merrill's Midwest Grillin'. They have several cookbooks and make many appearances around the state and country. And so great to have them back. And we're going to talk with them about getting the most from your grill and love to have you join in with your own questions and comments. You can call us at 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Mad Dog, good to have you back.
Larry, it's great to see you. You're looking wonderful. And I got Mr. Merrill. I got Mr. Merrill sitting right next to me. We are together again.
Oh, you're together.
We've
never been
together before.
Oh. And Merrill, you're feeling good and able to take nourishment, as they say?
They are. We've been around for quite a while, but we're still taking plenty of nourishment.
You know, it's the best I've seen them looking in 3 months.
Well, I tell you what, you've been doing a lot of cooking on a griddle. Is that right?
We have been. We're doing a lot of griddle cooking, and you know, and it's great. You know, it's not a new thing because there's been some on the market, but we see about 3-4 other companies now coming out with different griddles. And, you know, you start thinking in your mind the things you can do, like searing up bratwurst and then adding sauerkraut on the side with brown sugar and diced up apples and onions and tossing that around, then taking those cooked bratwurst and putting them on top of the sauerkraut. And then you can start your burgers where the bratwurst were. And then you put onions and peppers down. You start cooking them, and you put the almost done burgers on top of the onions and peppers, and you got yourself a meal, Larry. The grill cooking is neat. It really, really is fun. It really is fun. It's
love doing fajitas on the grill, you know. Take even a skirt steak or some chicken, dragging your vegetables from peppers to onions. Grill those right up. Take a tortilla, heat that up. Put that stuff right in your tortilla. You're ready to go.
You're making me hungry. Do you have a griddle especially designed for barbecue?
Well, you know, they do on the television show this year, and we have the Louisiana Grill and the Pit Boss. And Pit Boss has like a 2, a 3, a 5, and a 4 burner, you know, different ones. You can put one for anybody, one for every day of the week. So we have the 4 burner one on the television show, and it fires up, and those griddles are nice. But, you know, the really hot thing besides griddles also are the pellet grills. We've been traveling the countryside, different home and garden shows and sports shows, and I think more people have pellet grills when we see them than they do gas grills lately.
They do. You're really seeing the pellet grill market come on strong. You know, it's a lot easier, a lot cleaner. You just plug it in, you fire up. You can smoke at like 180 degrees if you want to. You fire up the pellet grill and grill the steaks up to 600 degrees, too. And then also they have a side burner, too, if you want to cook on a flame also.
So is there, what's the biggest advantage? It sounds like ease, but are there other advantages to the wood pellets?
Well, you know, the wood pellets, first of all, they win competition. They're great, but it really is the ease. It's digitally controlled. If you know you're doing boned in, skinned on chicken thighs, and you want to cook them for 2 hours, you set them at 320, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood, rather than the 350 or 375. You turn them down a little bit. You can cook them for 2 hours. It periodically pumps smoke into them, so you get a light smoke flavor. And it just comes out wonderful. But then there again, you can do cool smoke, or as Merrill was saying, there's a sear station where you flip over a switch and you got a pot fire right there where the pellets are right underneath it, and you got 600 degrees for searing. So you can do reverse sear steaks with perfection. Even Merrill could do them.
Yeah.
Larry, I think you could do them.
Merrill, you can really do them?
I do. I'll tell you what. I love it. It's just amazing. And also, you get smoke tubes that could go on your grill also. Or just a tube, fill it with pellets or with a wood chip. Light that, place that right on the grill. You go ahead and do your steaks. You get flavor on that, your chicken, your roast, your hams. Plus, if you like to do smoking of cheese, you just light the smoke tube. Don't even use any other heat. Place it on your grill. Put a block of cheese in there. Put the hood down. Let it smoke for about 3 hours. Just absolutely delicious.
Oh, man. Mad Dog and Merrill, our guests today, we're talking about grilling with them today. And certainly, if you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share, if you use those pellet smokers, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Somebody's wondering if there's anything special you need to cook on a griddle.
No, you really don't. You know, there's griddle sets out there. Some are silicone, some are more of a heavy duty plastic spatula. But you know, it's just a little bit of oil. So a lot of times, you know, like when you go to the hibachi style cooking, if you want to do some beautiful stir fried shrimp, I'll season the shrimp up, and then you just do a little splashing of oil over on that hot griddle, toss the shrimp on there, and do a little stir fry like they do at the hibachi place, and it comes out wonderful. You can add your mushrooms in there. You can add peppers and onions. The griddle, you know, keep it clean afterwards, I think, is the main thing, but, you know, that's with every grill. So there really is no, and most of them have a hood that comes down, and you can melt cheeses on top of burgers and everything else. Oh, man. We were at the World Pork Expo in Des Moines, Iowa. Got to be about 3 weeks now.
Right, yeah, exactly.
3 weeks ago in Des Moines, Iowa. And we did some beautiful boneless pork chops on the grill. And then we took cabbage and onions and peppers, and we cooked it down on the griddle a little bit. And then and threw some seasonings over the top of it and flipped it around. And it was such an easy thing to do. It's amazing. It really was. But now in the same realm, a lot of grills that you buy nowadays have as an accessory a griddle kit. So there's a griddle that you can take one of the top grates off and put it down in place of the grate and put the griddle in that spot and fire up the burner underneath. So there's different ways to get around it, you know, and you can buy griddles separately. You don't have to just buy a griddle. There's different angles to get at it to get the griddle-like effect.
Jim in Minocqua is up with a comment or question. Jim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. I don't have a question. I have a comment. I find that the pellet grills put out a light smoke compared to another smoker. But what I do is I add a smoker box. You can buy them at the hardware store. They're stainless steel. Yep. And I put wood chips in there, and that adds enough smoke to give me the flavor that I'm looking forward to. And also comment, I was in Sam's Club last week, and I was looking at briskets for the 4th of July cook-off, And I had sticker shock, and I asked for a security guard to walk it out of the car.
Well, you should have bought a brand new Cadillac instead of that brisket. You spend $108 on a slab of meat. You better do it right, you know, the first time. But the briskets are pretty easy to do, but it's a sticker shock. But with that smoke box, it's absolutely true. You know, the pellet grill. See, on a lot of pellet grills, like the Louisiana grills that we have, they have a prime button, and you can press that primer button, and that pumps extra smoke out now and then. So there's different avenues to get around that. Plus that tube,
right,
and that stainless steel tube Meryl's talking about is really neat. You put the wood pellets in there, use a natural starter at the end of that, where the end is, where the pellets are. You let it go for about 10 minutes, and literally you can put that tube, some sizes are different than others, in your grill, and it'll supply like 10 hours of smoke on that pellet tube. So there's different ways to do it. But the pellet grills are great. The gas grills are good. The Komodo styles are good. I mean, there's no right or wrong when it comes to cooking. It's just follow my rules and things will be good.
Along with your rules, did you pick up any new rules or learn some new things at the World Pork Expo? Pick up any new ideas?
You know what we did is people work hard. That's what we learned. There's a lot of good, hardworking people, and the farm people of the world are good, hardworking folks. And we learned that there's new technology, just like in the harvesting of animals. There's new technology, so is there in grilling. But what they did have is they had a whole street at the fairgrounds, up and down on both sides of hospitality suites, and each hospitality suite could only cook pork. And they had the big smoker unit. So we'd go from smoker unit to smoker unit, checking out the different pork chops, loins that they had on the grill, the big pork loins, the tenderloins, the pulled pork, the racks of ribs that they had. It was just a phenomenal thing. You know, we were drooling from one station to the other.
Yeah. The National Pork Association, what was really nice is that they had pork that was like a corn dog. So it was a breaded pork, like it would a corn dog, but it was all sausage on there. So it was just fantastic.
So,
Was it really?
Yeah.
What do you mean it was good? You had one?
You know, I had two of them.
Well, what the heck? I was hungry.
You should have walked over there.
Oh, man.
So, you know, Larry, right now we kind of stopped in the middle of a taping of a television show. We are on the Crystal River in Waupaca.
Oh.
And we are on the shores of the Crystal River, and we are in the shade, and we are at a beautiful cottage and inn, and it's just a gorgeous place, and we're cooking hors d'oeuvres. So we on our television show, we have Fast Freddy the Piano Man. He and his wife are staying here tonight, so we're doing an hors d'oeuvre party for a bunch of people, but taping a television show at the same time. So we're doing like slices of sausage, like salami, a slice of pepperoni, a little smoky, folded over, a toothpick to hold that together, and then we put a couple of olives on the end. Then we're actually smoking a potato chip dip. So it's cream cheese, it's sour cream, it's grated cheese, Worcestershire, Tabasco, bacon in there. So it's kind of a loaded potato chip dip that we're smoking and adding some smoke flavor to it in a cast iron skillet.
Right.
That's on the grill right now. I think I can smell it from here.
Oh, man, does that sound good.
Yeah,
I can't wait to try that.
And then there's a libation company here. and as I'm looking out the window, we have a nice little guest that are here watching us tape. And they're all drinking little mimosas and old fashions and all kinds of neat stuff.
I'm sure when we get out there, they'll all be asleep.
Yeah, probably.
Well, that reminds me. It reminds me of sauce. Misting bottles, mop sauces.
That's exactly right. You know, it's amazing, you know, because of that, like that gentleman that talked about the sticker shock of a price of meat, when cuts of meat are on the grill and in competition, every competitor either has a mop sauce style or they have a misting bottle. So when that cut of meat is on the grill and it's being slow cooked or even a faster cooked pork chop that you brown up and move over, I'll take a garden misting bottle. And I'll add apricot juice and a little white wine, a squeezing of lemon juice and a little oil. You can add apple juice in there. You can add beer in there. You can add bourbons in there. We do coffee, brewed up coffee, and we put it inside of those little misting bottles. But you add a little misting of love as you go along in that little garden bottle. Shake it up, go outside and mist it over the top of kebabs as they're cooking. And mop sauces down south, you know, down south, they take a mop sauce. They actually take on top of the stove a big pot, big old pot. I'm talking like a 20 quarter. And they add brewed coffee. They add a whole bunch of Worcestershire. They add sticks and sticks of butter. And they add cups of black pepper. And they brew that down into a mop sauce. And they mop that on their pork shoulders, their briskets, their racks of ribs all day long. So at home, you can makeshift. You can brew up fresh coffee, let it cool down, add a little Worcestershire, add some oil in there. Sorry, that was a landline they gave us in case this didn't work. But mop sauces, so the point is, cuts of meat are leaner and leaner. We talk about that when we were on your show before, Larry. But during the presentation, during the cooking portion of it, you need to add moisture, you need to add flavor, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, go ahead, Merrill.
Well, I wanted to talk also about, and we've talked about this before, is, you know, make a good rub. You know, in your kitchen cabinet at home, you've probably got at least 100 different types of rubs that you could create. And the big thing you want to do is, you know, like we've talked about the coffee rub before, equal amounts of coffee, equal amounts of your favorite seasoning, brown sugar, mix it up together. It's another great, great rub for ribs. But you could be very creative on rubs. So many different things you could use. Yeah.
So the difference between a rub and a seasoning, you can season a steak, you can season a hamburger or a pork chop. But when you see those competitors, or if you do it at home and you take that heavy rub and you actually roll that cut of meat and pack it in on top of it, that's sealing in the moisture, that's sealing in the flavor. Everything serves a purpose when you put things on a grill. Whether it seems that way or not, everything serves a purpose. So a good heavy rub really makes a difference. It really does. Plus, the smoke adheres nice to it.
Yeah, it's sounds wonderful. And pork chops. Somebody wondered about pork chops because it's easy to get dry pork chops out. And when you're using one of those smokers, can that be an issue?
Well, it can. I mean, the big thing is if you're going to do pork chops, you want to smoke them. You really want to go on a low, low smoke. If you can, even like 225, even lower, if you like. But you're going to have to use the thermometer. You don't want to overcook them. So you want to take those pork chops off about 140 degrees because it'll rise in temperature. Pork's done. The chops are done at 145. But cook on a low heat, but definitely use a thermometer. We talk about that all the time. Want to take those pork chops off definitely at 145. Then they'll be nice and moist.
So if that thermometer is the old-fashioned Taylor ones or the old-fashioned ones that say pork is done at 185, you get rid of those. Digital meat thermometers, man, they're instant read. You stick it in the cut of meat within 7 seconds, you got an accurate read. We swore years ago we never used meat thermometers, but I got one in every cooler that I bring along to any event I'm at. Because cuts of meat, you do not want to overcook. It goes back to that gentleman with the sticker shock. If you overcook that cut of meat, and what Merrill said is what we learned at the Pork Expo, which is true. We kind of knew primal cuts or cuts of meat directly from the animal are done with pork. They're done at 145. If it's ground up and it's been exposed a little bit, you cook it to 160. And then when you're talking racks of ribs or pulled pork or country-style ribs, they use the term until tender. So that's the difference there. But you certainly do not want to overcook cuts of meat. You certainly want to use a digital meat thermometer. It's probably one of the most important things you can buy this year.
Yeah, man, I wouldn't be without mine. I love that thing. It's so it's accurate.
That's exactly it. You know, if I wasn't using my phone right now, which we're doing, we're making the call from here in Waupaca area, I would actually go on my app, and we have our grill outside. I can turn my temperature down because I know that probably cheese spread is looking pretty good. But we got that at, 280 anyway.
Right, we do. Yeah.
That's pretty good. So that cheese spread, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Tell me more, that cheese spread.
I got a cast iron skillet. Cast iron's great to work with. I put 2 blocks of cream cheese. I put 2 containers of sour cream. I put 4 cups of freshly grated cheddar cheese from Wisconsin, about 7 dashes of Worcestershire, 7 dashes of Tabasco. We have a spice called Up North Peppery, so it's a black pepper blend. A few tablespoons of that in there, and some about a cup of bacon bits. And I kind of smeared that together as best I could, but that all got plopped right inside of that a cast iron skillet. That goes on the pellet grill. We added the extra tube of pellets to add a nice smoke flavor to it because we know we were cooking on a low heat and we wanted to add some really good smoke. So it's like when people do mac and cheese and put it on the smoker. You leave it exposed. You don't cover it up. It's exposed to the smoke and to the environment inside the grill because you want to add that beautiful flavor.
Oh.
And I guarantee you right now that thing's going to be just delicious.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
God. So yeah.
What's going on with the TV show? Tell us, what have you been doing?
You know, that gentleman from Minocqua, we're going to be up in St. Germain.
Yes, we are.
Next Tuesday. Right. We're going to be in Beloit on Saturday. We're in Waupaca, beautiful Chino Lakes area here today. And, you know, we tape a couple of television shows, it seems, every week. We try to do 26 shows a year so that they only repeat twice in a year's time. And it's just a hoot of a time. We were at the World Pork Expo taping a show. The week before that, we put on actually 40 hours of driving. We left our little area, New London. We drove up to Bagley, Minnesota. Bagley, Minnesota is the headwaters of the Mississippi up in Minnesota. So it's an 8-hour drive up there. We shot a beautiful television show up there.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, and I'll say Mad Dog, you can go to maddogandmeryl.com to find out where it airs. But it airs in 35 states, 140 markets. It's on Roku, Amazon, Fire, and there's a whole list of other things that you can get it on, but you have to go to the website to figure it out under Mad Dog and Meryl. But it's a hoot of a time. We got Fast Freddy on the keyboards. He's probably on his 6th libation already, I'll guarantee you.
Watch the show. We'll see how it works. He gets really playing.
Yeah, that ragtime music really flows. But it's just a hoot of a time. You know, we're having literally the time of our lives when it comes to doing the television show. It's a lot of fun, and it's entertaining to people. Apparently, a lot of folks do watch it. Alone in Milwaukee market, we got 15,000 people every week watching the darn thing. So it's amazing.
Well, I tell you what, and folks, again, go to maddogandmeryl.com, right?
Exactly right.
Go there, and you're going to get where you can watch that show. And also, you're going to find out more about the cookbooks and the products. Guys, it's always a pleasure. I'm pretty sure you're going to have a good rest of the day. Thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us today. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Give us a call anytime. Thank you much.
Thanks, Larry.
Yep. Thanks, Larry.
Mad Dog and Meryl, the grillologists, hosts of the TV show Mad Dog and Meryl's Midwest Grillin', and they have several cookbooks, and they've got some seasonings and rubs as well that I have used. I kind of like Grandma's seasoning. That's a good one. Anyway, it was fun to have them with us, and it was also great fun to have Jim Gould, and we'll give you some information coming up on our next book club selection coming up real soon. Just tomorrow, though, Kelly Norris is going to be back for Garden Talk, and Kelly's going to talk about how to create gardens that look like Mother Nature designed them. What about that? Think about that. Join in tomorrow at 11 on the Ideas Network. But you know what? In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Neeler.